Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome back to our special edition of the Terrible Podcast, our nightly look at the training camp practices after they happen. My co-host David Todd is off today, been working hard for gearing up for his work this next week. So tonight I'm joined once again, his second time back on the show. We're making this a habit, and that's a good thing. I'm, of course, talking about Ken Laird, morning host, co-host of Sports Talk on Trib Live Radio. You can listen to Ken every Monday through Friday from 9 to, what is it, Ken?
9 to 1
every morning. And Ken, follow Ken on Twitter at Ken_Laird. Ken, thanks for taking out time on a Sunday night.
You got it, David. It truly is a terrible podcast when I'm on.
No, it's not. It's actually a good podcast when you're on it. Ken, let's start off with the news that everybody's going to be talking about, and I'm sure you'll be talking about tomorrow morning with Guy on Trib Live Radio. The fight today, or several scuffles between Ike Taylor and Antonio Brown. Why don't you give us a little recap of how it started and what things ended up after practice?
Well, it was the very first play of red zone drills. They lined the team up at the 20-yard line, and Antonio Brown and Ike Taylor have had their share of battles, particularly when Emmanuel Sanders is out, as he was today. I've noticed that they've matched up Emmanuel and Ike a good bit. I kind of suspected early in camp they really wanted to test Sanders and see where he was, but Tomlin kind of blew that question off, and I asked it. But anyway, today it was Brown out on the left side of the formation, and Ben put a nice throw in. It was a low 20-yard, in little dig, and it was in a good spot. Ike was all over him, though, and really, and it was the second interception he made on the day, which is, I thought maybe there'd be a full moon or something. I guess Clint Parma says a grand slam, and Ike Taylor has two picks on the day. Something's going on, but it really was a terrific interception with one hand. I don't know if it hit the ground or not, but he spun and he came up with it, and he was holding the football in the air. And the next thing you know, Antonio was hot about something, whether it was the tight covers or something Ike had said, or whether he was, you know, mocking him after the pick. But they got into a beef. Ike spun him around. They landed on the ground. Taylor's helmet came off. There were a couple of punches thrown, and I saw Ike had a little bit of an ice bag on his head after practice was done. So it was a couple of pretty good haymakers thrown in there. You know, they broke it up and they went right back to work as quickly as they could. But after practice was done, they got back at it again. Casey Hampton was in there, I think, egging on Antonio. He was giving him the business, the verbal business after the fact. And I know, just talking from Hampton over the years, you know, he has a very low tolerance for young guys who are, you know, in his opinion, go beyond, you know, where they should be. Not that Brown's not a good player and he is the reigning team MVP, but I think that stirred it back up again and looked like they were trying to hug and kiss and make up, after that. But it was something to see today.
And evidently, Kevin Colbert and Scotty Montgomery was in the mix there at, you know, cooling them off after practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's family day. You know, it's supposed to be all niceties. But, and Mike Tomlin, he was asked two questions about it. He actually got a little hot on the follow-up. He felt he had answered it sufficiently in the first question around from Jim Colony over at the Fan, but he explained it away as being an emotional game by emotional men, and that's all well and good. But you don't want two star players swinging, especially with one guy having a helmet on. Tomlin, he's not going to say anything negative. He's going to paint it as good as can be. But I think Kevin Colbert and the other coaches, they got to cut that out.
Do you think there's anything to this now? They've tussled a few times in camp here, or is it just as Tomlin said, spirited practice with two very competitive guys?
Yeah, they are competitive. I mean, I think anybody who's seen Antonio Brown play over his couple of years here, you can see the raw emotion. And somebody who came from a difficult background at times, I mean, had the not the easiest life growing up, and Mike Taylor the same way. These guys have, you know, there's a reason they became great players. They're driven. Antonio's hot. He's emotional. He's a typical wide receiver. So Mike got the better of him today. Apparently he didn't like it. He's got to learn to control that better. He said that at times. I mean, his post-catch and TD celebrations rubbed some people the wrong way. So that's still a part of his makeup. I mean, but he works his butt off. That's the one thing. I mean, I saw him out there today. He caught a pass and was over by the water jug and between one of the scaffoldings where they've got the camera up. And, I mean, he really could have injured himself, but he goes full out on every play. It really is something to watch.
Eyes up, chest up, prayed up, and fist up.
That's it.
Ike Taylor, we haven't heard too terribly much about him outside of, you know, just regular practice reports and all. But is Ike having a good camp, in your opinion?
I think so. I mean, his hands look a whole lot better than they have, I mean, ever. But I hate to make a judgment. It's just, for the most part, you know, practicing, well, shorts and sometimes, you know, pads. But I think he's really worked his butt off in the offseason. My hunch is that the way it ended didn't sit well. I mean, how could it? Well, you know, with Demaryius Thomas running the gamut, and he took a lot of heat on Twitter and elsewhere from people. He still does. I'm sure every day he wakes up with nasty messages in his mailbag. So he went back to work. I mean, you got to give him credit for his work ethic. So he's, without him, they'd be in real dire situation. I mean, he's been very durable throughout his career. I think they count on him. To the point where they put him out on an island against Demaryius Thomas last year. I think he's had a very good camp.
The other highlight today was, of course, the goal line drill. The defense evidently owned that 6-1, I guess. Why don't you take us through, you did a great job of live tweeting it. Why don't you kind of relay in words to our listeners what happened in that?
Yeah, it was pretty embarrassing for the offense, to be honest. They only had three running backs. That had to have altered what they wanted, you know, were intending to do on the drill. I'm sure John Clay was in the mix today, but he left with Tomlin caught a groin or a hip injury of some significance and had to be carted off. So they were down to Baron Batch and Chris Rainey and Will Johnson, the fullback, who actually got a lot of work as just a one-back set today. And they brought Jamie McCoy in for some fullback work. But, you know, they put the big hogs in the middle on defense. They had McClendon and Alameda Ta'amu's side by side with a four-down line in the front with Ziggy and Cam Hayward. And those first couple, they had occupied the blockers to the point where Larry Foote was just a missile coming through twice, went right after Will Johnson and rocked him pretty good. Johnson said afterwards he thought it was a draw, but it didn't look like a draw to me. He looked more like the nail. And Larry Foote's a veteran. He knows that drill pretty well from being there a lot of years. But the line wasn't blowing anybody off the ball, that's for sure. They've got a bunch of guys in new parts and places, you know, moving Marcus Gilbert back to the left side. So other than one Chris Rainey plant and leap off of left guard, it was a one-sided affair.
Of course, you mentioned the offensive line being shaken up, and that's due to the Mike Adams knee injury. As you mentioned, Marcus Gilbert back over on the left side, second practice in a row. Ramon Foster, a right tackle, but they're still getting reps in their regular positions, I think you said. You tweeted out today as well. One guy that you know, I charted the offensive line and have my rankings up from the game against the Eagles, Ryan Lee, albeit against, I always like to frame this, that it was against, you know, the late in the game, a third team Eagles defense and all. Ryan Lee, I thought at left guard had a good game, but he's still not moving up in any of the rotation from what you're seeing.
Not today he didn't. They had him out there with the third unit. And they had John Malecki at second team right guard, which is a little surprising to me because I thought you did a real nice job, Dave, on the write-up of, you know, your O-line, D-line grades. And as you pointed out, it's tough, you know, when they're playing against third teamers on the other side, it's tough to really, you know, tell how successful they're being, but you can you know, when a guy's really struggling, and I thought Malecki has really had a tough camp all told. He's their third center, and maybe they feel like they want to give him a look at guard and give him a real chance there. This is kind of the dog days of camp when they would be moving guys around in different parts anyway, so maybe not to read into it too much, but, you know, I thought Lee's held his own, so, you know, you start looking at who the 9 or 10 O-linemen that might be to make the team. It's probably hard to see Ryan Lee really making a roster spot, but if he can squeeze onto the practice squad, he looks like he's a big, strong guy who could play a couple spots for him.
Yeah, I called him. He looked country strong, you know, in that game tape that I went through. And you know, he lacks technique, and I'm with you. I think now he's probably the leader in the clubhouse, maybe as one of the offensive line positions they keep on the practice squad there. Trey Essex, although you know, I've learned to know what to expect, you know, from Trey Essex over the years. But you know, he lost all that weight and really looked good, you know, according to pictures he posted on Twitter this offseason. And of course, he played both right and left tackle the other night. I was really, really disappointed with that performance. You know, I knew what to expect at left tackle, but I thought at right tackle, you know, I was expecting a little bit more from him there. Do you think he's kind of struggling? I mean, is this a guy that's in jeopardy possibly of not making the 53 despite his position flexibility of playing five positions on the offensive line?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's going to depend on Max Starks. Talking to Max today, he talked to us at lunch, and you know, he basically ruled out any chance he would come back this week. He said they'd have to tie him up with popsicle sticks and wrap, you know, and rubber bands just to put him out there this week. So he says maybe the end of August it would be reasonable. He could see himself playing. That's plenty enough time, but you just don't know if, you know, we're getting close now to the regular season. At least Trey Essex has done it before. They got, you know, Mike Adams and a bunch of young guys behind him to tackle there. Even Gilbert has played 1 year, but never on the left side so much. So, you know, you want to come into the season without any veteran presence at all. So I think that's obviously the main thing that Trey's got going for him. But if he can't play, he can't play. So they moved him back to the second team left, and maybe he'll handle that side better. I think, Dave, they really got to consider Marcus Gilbert as the left tackle. I mean, he sounds like he wants to play there. Give him a shot. I think it's easier to expect Starks to come back on the right side. At least Ben could see the pressure coming and get out of there. You know what I mean? I think Marcus Gilbert on the left side is taking a real possibility.
I brought that up to my co-host David Todd yesterday or the day before on the podcast after Adams went down, that I'm with you, especially if the experiment with Ramon Foster at right tackle works. And even if it doesn't, you know, at least Ramon, you know, at least it won't be on the blind side with Max coming back. And Max, of course, did play right tackle early on in his career, so it shouldn't take him long to get up to speed as far as that side. But I think this is a big game coming up against the Colts for Marcus Gilbert, as you said. I mean, the guy said all offseason, if given his druthers, he'd rather play left tackle. He played it at Florida. And, you know, he knows that that's the money position, too, is left tackle, at least until Mike Adams gets up to speed. So, yeah, I share the same opinion with you that basically in the fact that the game against the Colts, that this is going to be a big, you know, a big game for Marcus Gilbert, you know, where left tackle goes. What other things, Ken, kind of stuck out to you today? Maybe some 7-on-7 stuff or some red zone work? How about some names that we really didn't hear on Twitter today?
Well, we're trying to figure out who's going to make it on defensive back, you know, beyond the obvious candidates. They typically would keep 10. I think Robert Golden's been kind of a neat story. Would be, you know, the fifth safety. But if he could play a little nickel for them, he's physical in the run game. I'm not sure quite how they would use him, but I was watching him a little bit today. He looks good. Rookie out of Arizona, and I really didn't know anything about him coming into the year. But I can't find a fifth cornerback that's obvious. I don't know who this fifth wide receiver is going to be if Wallace doesn't come back. So those are the things where you just kind of look out there and scratch your head. Did anybody emerge to you in those two positions in the game Thursday night? Nothing really that jumped out to me. And otherwise, they were so depleted in running back today, there wasn't much else to watch. I think maybe Jamie McCoy is a tight end and David Paulson that might have a spot opened up here now that David Johnson's out. But, you know, beyond that, it's kind of the grind of camp right now.
Yeah, and, you know, Golden stuck out to me more on special teams in that game than he actually did in the secondary. I'm going to go back into that game again another time through and kind of watch Golden a little closer because he supposedly had a nice practice yesterday as well. You know, and you're right. I think they're going to have to, for the first time in a few years, keep five safeties on the 53-man roster because Ryan Clark's going to be down in the opening game against Denver. And as far as a fifth cornerback goes, I'm with you there, too. Normally they like to keep six, but I don't see how they're going to do that this year, especially with nobody stepping up. We've heard Terrence Frederick's name just a few times, But, you know, unless these guys are helping out on special teams, I'm with you. And I think right now that's sort of the things to look for going forward in these next few preseason games is will a fifth wide receiver, maybe a Derek Williams or a Tony Clemens, step up there? And in the you know, you mentioned Robert Golden in the secondary, and maybe one of those young cornerbacks come forward. But, yeah, it's good information. I heard Curtis Brown had an interception today. Good practice for him, yes?
Yeah, I saw the pick. It looked good. Caught off one in the slot there. So he's a battler. He's a good special teams player, too, if he can stay healthy. I mean, he's going to make the team. There's no doubt about it. I do like, you know, they have a couple linebackers this year between Spence and, Stevenson Sylvester and Brandon Johnson. I don't know. He's kind of a mystery to me. And he even said today he's built the way. He doesn't really fit a position either way. You could see in the game they were working, he and Sylvester, inside and outside, kind of split time. But at least those guys are all special teams players. Doesn't matter as much in kick coverage, I guess, but as long as they can find some good, solid punt return or punt coverage guys, then they're worth keeping around, and you'll see what happens. But, they look better on the inside with their inside linebacker depth than they do on the outside, that's for sure.
I wrote quite extensively about Brandon Johnson because he, as you put it, he's an unknown where he fits. He's kind of like a round peg in a square kind of hole because of where he played in the Bengals defense, and he's not really one to rush the passer from the outside linebacker position his entire career. Now, he's great dropping in coverage, and we saw one play against the Eagles where he had a great read and dropped into coverage, and then on the interception, he provided the pressure on the outside for the Al Woods interception there. But he's kind of a mystery, too, and kind of worth watching going forward there. Sean Spence, what's your takeaway from him from that game the other night? I thought he showed great sideline-to-sideline speed. Was there anything that jumped out to you, throughout practices and in that game on Spence?
Well, he's a good football player. I mean, you could not see what they saw in him. Eventually, he's going to have some time where he gets caught up in the wash. He's not that big of a guy. I mean, neither is Larry Foote either. He kind of reminds me of Foote a little bit. He's got that hard-hitting ability, and he does have that good read and react skill coming forward. So, he's going to make it. He hasn't been a disappointment. I'm not sure his ceiling is, Ray Lewis, certainly not a Ray Lewis, but, to the elite Lawrence Timmons even point where he'll make a huge impact like that, but I think he's a good solid football player. It's not a bad pick for a third rounder.
I know better than to have you speculate about another man's groin, but in fact, we got a few comments back on that. But that's probably the best quote that we've had on the Terrible Podcast in 200 episodes now. So instead of speculating on the groin, though, he was in a lot of pain, though.
Yeah, Clay just pulled up out of nowhere. He was just running with it. So I don't know what he tried to plant. I wasn't watching. I just kind of watched the tail end of it, and he stopped, and they whistled the drill down. So, he was going to have a tough – it was a battle to make the team anyway, I think, for Clay. But, just as far as depth right now, you hate to lose a guy. It's not the end of the world. But this week, if Redmond's not back and Dwyer, he seems to be hurt every week you got three running backs coming into the weekend. That's not good. You don't want to give Chris Rainey, who's easier Ferrari. He's in there getting goal line carries today, and I mean he's making the squad. He's going to be a major factor on the team. So I think they'd rather have him in for a couple series and get him out of there against the Colts Sunday night.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if by tomorrow we don't see a transaction for another body getting. Yep. Maybe they bring back that Chad Spann who was on the roster at the end of last year, so that's something to watch for tomorrow. Lamar Woodley, that was the groin that we were speculating last time, but he played yep. against the Eagles. Is he looking back healthy and all? Was he running around good today?
Yeah, he was okay. I mean, I saw him take some time out of one drill and wanted to get his right ankle taped. I think Wood is pacing himself. Even Keith Butler kind of torched him when he talked to Mark Caballi for a story. They tried to light the fire under him, but between he and James Harrison, they are in coast mode until the season starts to amp up. So at least he's back in there and going through the motions. He and Chris Carter were the outside linebackers today. So if Harrison in a couple weeks is back, I think those guys will be fine.
Ken, great information today. For those listening, if you're not listening in the morning, Sports Talk on Trib Live Radio from 9 to 1 every morning. If you missed the show, they have the podcast up to listen to. The guys at the Trib are always great friends of mine, have been for some time, always good about coming on the podcast and chatting back and forth on Twitter. Make sure you're following Ken on Twitter at Ken_Laird and reach out to him, let him know you heard him on the Terrible Podcast. Ken, I appreciate your time on a Sunday evening, and be looking to listen to you in the morning.
Always fun, Dave. Thanks for having me on.